This is the Hollywood Outsider, weekly movie and TV podcast for the new episode every Thursday. And this week we are going to look at upcoming releases, Two Guns, Smurfs 2, because there were so many unanswered questions from the first one, and Europa Report. We're going to have spoiler-free reviews of The Conjuring, RIPD, and we're going to have a sneak peek at Wolverine and more. Our From the Outside In topic this week, songs we can't hear without thinking of a movie, and a listener's email on EnsembleCast. We're going to have the latest movie and TV news, including our own trivia segments. My name is Aaron Peterson. With me today are my fellow host, Scott Clark.
Hey, how you doing, Aaron?
Fantastic. Brian Williams?
Good morning.
Good morning. We're broadcasting in England right now, apparently. And Justin McCumber. I'm just picturing you holding that boombox over your head.
Yep,
outside my window. How's it going, Justin?
Oh, doing pretty well. How are you doing, man?
Fantastic.
Hey, did you guys hear that our insurance, like our home insurance, is officially covered by in the event of a Sharknado?
Have you been waiting all week just to throw another
Sharknado? No, I actually read about it right before we started recording. Like,
that's an act of what?
It's an act of something falling from the sky.
Bad film.
And, yeah. So if a Sharknado happens, your house is safe.
God, I want the people who made that to drown. Just drown.
And after hearing a certain podcast that talked about it, I actually want to see it now. I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. They did not do that.
That is just sad. Just sad. Oh, before we move on, we have to make a correction. Junebug, thank you for catching us or calling us out. We appreciate it. Last week, Mr. Brian referenced The Seventh Son, and he said it was written by Orson Scott Card, who did write a book that's called The Seventh Son. It's actually based on the series by Joseph Delaney, so... Brian's bad, but I agree with him, so I guess are bad. Do you feel bad, Brian?
Hell no. I couldn't give two shits.
That's what I was looking for. All right, what'd you guys think about Comic-Con? It's finally over. It's done. Everybody's talked about it. There's a lot of cool shit. What'd you guys think?
Didn't go.
Yeah, I really want to go. That's all. That's pretty much what I got out of it.
Next year.
We should do it.
Yeah, we're going to try and go next year.
Yeah, my wife said, we are going next year. By that, she means I'm going while she drives around San Diego, maybe up to L.A.
Hey, whatever works.
So what you're saying is we can crash at your house and you'll drive us out there?
That's fine.
I wish.
We'll chip in for Cheetos. What was your favorite moment? Anybody have a favorite moment? Mine was when Loki took the stage at the Marvel conference.
Yeah.
When he just popped in. And I mean, I commend any actor that's willing to look that stupid and awesome at the same time.
My favorite was Bryan Cranston running around with the mask of himself, and then people didn't know it was him.
He just thought it was a guy playing him.
On a similar note, did you see the creepy picture of the girl running around with another hat that was similar in reality, but it was like it was Ron Jeremy. She had a Ron Jeremy head. So there's this girl running around with Ron Jeremy's head on her shoulders. Was she
dressed like
she was in normal clothes and stuff, so it was, but it's just a matter of there's this chick.
That's what I meant. You could tell it was a chick. Okay.
Body. But
how could you tell, Brian? Please explain.
Well, her boobs look different than Ron Jeremy's boobs.
Less hairy.
A lot less hairy. Yeah. So
it's already off the rails. We haven't even started yet. Real quick, before we get into movie news, Brian wanted me to bring this up. They are doing an Apollo Creed movie. I guess it is kind of movie news. It's going to be about Apollo Creed's grandson. And Sylvester Stallone is going to make an appearance as Rocky Balboa.
On the show? Or
no, not yet.
Yeah, he's going to come on the show from the movie.
He's actually going to pop up and reprise his role.
Really?
I think that's fantastic.
That is pretty cool.
It's an interesting way to keep the franchise alive, for sure.
Yeah. Who would have known that... back in the 70s, that Rocky would still be a valuable franchise.
It's a lot better than going the street fighting route that they did in Rocky V.
That's true. If they would have thrown Jean-Claude in that movie, that would have been perfect. just saying.
Okay. Who's he going to fight then, I wonder? Who's Apollo Creed's kid going to fight, I wonder?
Iron Man.
He's going to fight Tony Stark. Just random.
Jason Samoa or what's his name from...
Jason Momoa?
Samoa.
Not to be confused with his cousin, Billy Philippines.
All right, let's go to the real movie news. Batman is officially going to be up with or against, however they're going to do it, Superman in Man of Steel 2. They've officially released the title. It's either going to be Batman versus Superman or Superman versus Batman. But either way, Batman's going to be in the next Superman movie. How awesome is that?
It's really awesome. In the comic books, there's a history of that. I know Frank Miller, when he wrote The Dark Knight Returns, part of it was about Superman and Batman squaring off. So it certainly isn't without some kind of precedent. But I'm really glad that this shows that even though DC is going to have to get someone new to play Batman and bring Batman into this continuity of films, that they're not going to redo the entire origin story again and bore all of us to tears with a story that we've already seen a million times. Looks like they're going to jump right into it. Now it's just all the speculation about who's going to play Batman.
Yeah, that was one thing that I'm excited about is the fact that they're just, they're just jumping straight into it. Just, hey, Batman's an existing character. So I'm pretty stoked about that. And especially the fact that they're taking, of course, elements from the Dark Knight Returns books. So that was some good news to hear.
Now, you guys are the bigger comic book guys than I am, but correct me if I'm wrong, doesn't Batman kill Superman in the comics?
No, he beats him within an inch of his life.
He doesn't kill him.
Okay.
He just makes sure Superman knows one man beat him, and it was me.
Oh, okay.
Batman, basically, in the comic books, he's got a kill switch for damn near every superhero just in case they ever go rogue. Mm-hmm. That's what Batman does.
See, I thought that from
that's
my understanding,
he's
it was
better than everybody.
Superman was like the one guy that he had killed.
No,
doesn't kill anybody, and Superman was, that's what I had heard.
No,
he killed the Joker in that series.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I mean, Superman was, for all intents and purposes, he was practically dead in that. So, but yeah, I mean, at the precipice, he's brought back to life. But it's a fantastic series. I don't know how much of that. I'm under the impression they're just going to take elements of it. But
I'm sure. I mean, if you think about it, really, in this film universe that they're going to create, it would be really easy to see why Batman would see Superman as a threat. I mean, when you're looking at a person who is almost a god, that's somebody that you definitely want to keep an eye on and maybe just take out at the earliest possible chance you've got. And Superman would look at Batman as nothing more than a super technologically toyed vigilante. So you'd want to take him out. I'm sure somewhere in that fight they'll discover a camaraderie and reason for joining together. But there are definitely believable reasons for why each other would look at the other as a threat and a villain.
Well, imagine the ones after that if they do team up and then start fighting crime
well,
together.
I think they're setting up for Justice League. I mean, that's right. Really the whole purpose.
Yeah.
So get them here, we're against each other, but now look, we're buddies at the end, and now we can start the Justice League and find Aquaman because that's the guy everybody's waiting for.
Aquaman.
Aquaman's awesome.
He can be.
He can be if you're in the water.
Right.
If you're on land, he sucks. He's of no use to you. Avengers.
He just kind of flops around.
He does. He just... Avengers has a subtitle. Finally, it's called Age of Ultron. It has been revealed, but Hank Pym isn't the creator. I guess it's going to be Tony Stark, if I'm understanding this right.
They basically took the title of Age of Ultron. It's a run of comics that's actually wrapping up here real soon. It's still going on. So they're actually just taking kind of the title from it. But they're taking the story part of it is actually coming from all the past decades of the Avengers comic.
So, well, see, I mean, Ultron's been around since, what, the late 60s? I mean, he first appeared in an Avengers comic, and pretty much his entire existence has revolved in one way or another around the Avengers. Hank Pym, who will be showing up in the first film of Phase 3, Ant-Man, he is Ant-Man. Originally, he's the person who created Ultron, this machine that goes rogue. And Ultron's one of those typical comic book characters that gets destroyed. Then it kind of rebuilds itself. It comes back. They destroy it again. And, up to the point where I think there was like 13 different iterations of Ultron. At one point, he did take over Iron Man's armor. So there is a comic book history to some of this, and who knows how much of that they're going to pull from for this film. But I think Ultron's a very interesting villain, and if they can, you know, weave in him taking over Iron Man's iron or his suit, or, you know, maybe Stark building him and that being something that he has to pay for, I think it'd be an interesting story.
I have faith in whatever it's going to be. It could be like the Avengers walk into the Quickie Mart. I don't care. I'm sold. Gina Carano apparently is going to beat some demon ass. And Evangeline.
Evangeline? Is that her pronunciation?
Evangeline? Yeah.
Evangeline.
She avenges Aline.
Yeah. Apparently, you can obviously tell this is a Comic-Con week because we've got a lot of comic book movie stories going on. I was not familiar with this property at all. I actually had to look it up and learn a little bit about myself. And there's three important things to know about Evangeline. And the first is that she's a fallen angel who fights demons and monsters. The second is that she feels no pain or other human senses. And the third is that she wears next to nothing.
Well, the
score.
I don't know. I don't have any real tie to the series. I've obviously never read the series. To me, this is one of those comics that if I read it, it's one that I'd be worried what people would think about me for reading it. Oh, I'm a 13-year-old boy just wanting to see boobs and that kind of thing. But I haven't read it. I don't know the context at all. It sounds like an interesting concept because there actually is a religious element to it. Like she's actually like not the right hand of God, but she's like God's favorite angel or something like that. And
now he's picking favorites?
Apparently.
This is kind of bullshit.
Brian and Justin, you guys probably know a lot more than I do. Am I close to home here? I
know absolutely nothing about this character.
Yeah,
There's actually another character called Evangeline. Evangeline or Evangeline, something like that. Now, this is Evangeline, which I don't know why on earth you would create a character that sounds almost exactly like something else.
Avengers, yeah.
That's why you do what I do and just say shit wrong.
First off, it was created by Rob Liefeld, who has a questionable kind of taste factor already going on. But yeah.
Is he normally like he likes things dirty? Is that what you're saying?
He's cheesy. And when I first started reading him, I think I mentioned him back when we were talking about X-Force. His art style is not one that I really cared for. It was always about his characters had these tiny, tiny feet, massive shoulders. All of his women always had arched backs, you know, huge boobs.
Yeah, he was a guy that I liked initially when he first kind of broke onto the scene with a few of the X titles and stuff. But it was, and although it was very irritating to a certain extent because he always had these huge hulking characters with the small heads, and the chicks were, of course, every one of them was just these voluptuous, you know, waists about, I don't know, 3 inches wide or something like that, and of course they just went up. I'll just say in a V shape, straight all the way up.
I will say though, from seeing the pictures of this character from the comic book, picturing Gina Carano in that makes a lot of sense. Not just from
it does to me.
No, not just not just from that aspect, but I could see that. I think in the other movies that I've seen her in, she had shorter hair, and the comic book character has longer hair. If she grew that out, it looks like a good fit.
I'm sorry, I have no interest at all in this movie because the two things that I've seen her in where she's had a somewhat prominent role in it, she's been horrible.
That's true.
I hate to say it, as much as I love Gina Carano, and I love her.
I do too.
As an MMA fighter, she is fan-fucking-tastic. In the fights in the movie she's been in, fantastic. As an actress, she sucks. She is awful.
Maybe she'll get better.
There's coaches. They can help some people.
Maybe.
They haven't.
I'll just say I was kind of disappointed when I first saw this news. I thought they were actually talking about a character called Angelus, which is a character that revolves around a Witchblade in the Darkness, which is a much more visually and story-wise interesting character. I thought that's who they were doing, but then when I had looked at it, I was like, oh, it's a Rob Liefeld character. All right. Interest waning.
All right, super nerds. Paramount hired two new writers to take Star Trek III into the future, and they aren't the guys that worked on the first two movies. Which, obviously, that's what new means. Are you happy about that, Justin, or are you bummed?
Well, no, I mean, I'm happy in the respect that with some new blood coming in to the Star Trek franchise. It will hopefully bring some freshness to what they're doing. It's got a new director, so a new crew's coming in, you know, behind the camera. So hopefully that means good things. These guys who they're bringing on, Ashley Edward Miller and Zach Stentz, who wrote the first Thor film and X-Men First Class. So these guys know comic books. They know sci-fi. They, you know, these are not guys who are unknowns to this kind of stuff. In fact, Ashley Miller, I actually had him on my other podcast years ago when he was more of a TV writer. And, you know, he was a nice guy then. I'm sure it's still the same. But, no, these are guys who are quality writers. I thought Thor was a fairly well-written film, and I liked X-Men First Class quite a bit. So, yeah, bring them on. I'm sure they'll be able to handle it just as well as the other guys did.
I'm nervous. The whole Star Trek thing is making me nervous. It seems like they're getting – I like new blood, but I really like the direction that they've gone. The last two movies, especially – The second new one. What is it? The eighth? I don't know how you explain it, but you know what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Into Darkness.
This would be 2.3.
Thank you.
They would be writing.
Thank you. I absolutely love that movie, and I really don't. I'm scared. I'm nervous about it. Even though I'm sure they're great writers and they've done wonderful things, and they'll probably take it to a wonderful direction. They're changing the director. You're changing the writers. I'm nervous, and I'm not even a big Lindelof fan.
Do you? Is it one of those things to where you feel like, well, now, because it's been such a fad in a way, I mean, it's kind of been the way things have been for about the last decade or so, where three movies seems to be the cutting off point. Do you feel like you're just kind of being cut short before they change groups?
There's something to be said for that, because recently, especially the last, you know, like Brian said, decade or so, these sequels and trilogies, however you want to word it, have generally been manned by the same people for most franchises, and the quality seems to hold because of that.
I'm sorry, Spider-Man 3 begs to differ with you.
All right, but that's a studio problem. If Venom wouldn't have been in that movie, I bet that movie would have been great.
Or Sam Raimi not had anything to do with it. Might have been good, too.
I will fucking stab you with a rock.
Kirsten Dunst, I don't, you know, Tobey Maguire.
Emo dancing.
You take away any or all of those, and you're...
All right. You know,
if we're just a Touché. Completely different movie,
leave that trilogy out of it.
Kurtzman and Orci, though, who did write the first two with Lindelof in the second one, they're still going to be involved in the script. And I'm sure that they, you know, they're still going to be there as producers. So I'm sure if they have any concerns or problems with the script and story that Miller and Stentz are going to be putting out, they'll step in and help out. So it's not like they're just washing their hands and walking away.
All right.
They'll still be there.
We'll see what happens. Well, I don't know why I just went high pitch right there. We'll see what happens.
You know, it all hits us at one some point. Just they finally dropped. Way to go, man.
Oh, they're in the chair.
Way to go.
the last piece of comic book news, and then we'll move on to comic book movie news. Then we'll move on to the trailers. Mark Webb, who is helming the new Spider-Man movies, he's teasing the Sinister Six for Spider-Man at some point, because he keeps referencing the Gentleman.
You know, they've got, let's say what, Electro, well, Rhino really wasn't part of them, but Rhino is in this one. To me, it looked like Mysterio at the little stinger at the end of the movie. There's the others like Dr. Octopus, Kraven the Hunter, who was later replaced by the Hobgoblin. You got the Vulture and Sandman. You could be setting, I mean, this could be something, you know, they're setting something bigger up, which I kind of hope is the case, because really, I'm sorry, the whole Peter Parker trying to save MJ or Gwen or whoever the case is to me a very stale.
It's old. Yep, I agree with you. As a huge Spider-Man fan, it's old.
Right, and this franchise needs a much larger arc, which if it was able to be tied in with maybe the Fantastic Four or the Avengers would kind of help with that, but all we really know right now is the focus, as far as all the other villains right now, the focus is supposed to be mainly on Electro and kind of how does Spidey match up against him, since webs don't really do a whole lot to stop electricity. So I don't know. What do you, are you kind of pulling for a Sinister Six type of thing?
Or? I think they've got, you know, they've got their four movies out. I mean, they basically have dates for the next three movies. And I think that's because I'm hoping, maybe I'm being way too optimistic, but I think they have a long-term goal.
Yeah.
And I think whether it be Marvel or Sony, whoever it is, they want to take Spider-Man to a different level than the obviously Raimi's did, haters. And I think Sinister Six is going to be the ultimate goal. I think maybe that's what the fourth movie, I'm saying I think a lot because I have no idea, but that's what the fourth movie looks to be for, I would guess, is this movie, they're set, because they can't have all these villains. I mean, there's like five or six or four fucking villains in the next movie.
Why not?
Movie.
They have that many heroes
well,
in the Avengers.
But they can, because it's, history has proven that it rarely works well.
I mean, Spider-Man 3 proved it didn't work very well.
That's touche.
Well, and so did Batman 3, Batman 4.
Any Batman without Christopher Nolan? Yeah. You just can't have multiple villains for the most part. It just rarely works. But if they are doing it to set up, you know, if they're using one movie to build to the next movie and then build to where that actually comes into focus, that I could see. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that's what they're doing. Yeah, if that's what they're doing, that sounds fantastic. If it's not what they're doing, then they're, what the fuck are they doing?
And again, especially if at the end, and again, this is a dream, if they like tie in the Avengers with
that
somehow.
They won't. People can stop talking about that. That's never going to, I'd love for that to happen. It's never going to happen.
I could see Fox letting in Wolverine. I can never see Sony letting Spider-Man show up.
They would want too much of the chunk, and Disney's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. New. It's not going to happen. Greedy sons of bitches.
What do you guys think, though, about the pictures that have come out for Electro?
I think it looks like shit.
I think it looks badass.
Emphasis on the bad.
Yeah. Oh, I love that look of that electricity beneath the skin.
I think it looks really cheesy.
Oh, I am so pumped.
But I will say a lot of that stuff looks better once you see a trailer and you see it in, you know, context. But the pictures I've seen, Brian, agree with me, disagree.
I totally agree with you. I think that looks, right now it looks horrible. But again, you know, a lot of times you see the early release stuff and it doesn't look right. And maybe it's the context that you're seeing it in. You're not seeing him, how he's interacting with his surroundings and everything. So it is a very myopic kind of visual, but when the movie comes out or we start seeing trailers, we'll get a better idea. Mm-hmm. But my early impressions are not very favorable.
Welcome to Brian's Trailer Park.
All right, Marshmallows, you asked for it. Nay, you demanded it, and now, yes, you got it. In early 2014, you get your Veronica Mars movie. The Kickstarter record breaker is filming, and your favorite teenage private investigator is now 10 years older, and she's a lawyer. And, of course, what's waiting for Miss Mars when she gets to her high school reunion? That's right, a new case. Justin, I know you're the resident Marshmallow here, so just take this away, please.
Well, I think Aaron and I are both equal in our love and affection for Veronica Mars. I was a massive fan of the television show. I own the DVDs. I love them to death. I think it's one of the most smartly written shows that I've ever seen. I thought that Kristen Bell did an amazing job at such a young age to play this character with the strength and intelligence that she did. And now that they're getting a movie, and getting some footage out there, this trailer, I am so excited. I was glad to, more than happy, to pony up some money in the Kickstarter, and now I'm going to get to reap the rewards of that. The trailer looks fantastic. I couldn't be really happier with it. The tone of it is there from the show, and the little mention of a hellmouth at the end of it just kind of gave me a double squee.
Yeah, pretty much the same thing. I was pretty enamored with watching it. And I love how they did it because, you know, they're trying to say, hey, you guys paid for this. All the fans took care of us and made this movie happen. So the first, you know, it's like a 5-minute reel, which, of course, you can find on the website. The first 3 minutes of it are behind-the-scenes footage, basically re-informing you who the characters are, who the actors are, you know, what they're doing, who Veronica is, and then doing the trailer, which I thought was a great setup for a movie that a lot of people haven't seen, or a TV show that a lot of people didn't see. I loved it.
I mean, I never watched the show. I'd never watched the first episode. Don't really know anything about it, to be honest with you. Coming from just walking into, it doesn't do much for me. Mm-hmm. Because it looks like It looks like something that it's all about the inside information. It's all about kind of flashing you the inside jokes or the people that maybe, hints to some things that went on in the past and kind of showing you the characters that, oh yeah, your favorite jerk is here or your favorite, whatever, these people that you hated or liked in the past, we're bringing them all back. Mm-hmm. And that's great for the show if you're a fan, or for the movie, for the fan, if you're a fan. For somebody like me, or I don't know, Scott, did you see it? Or did you watch it?
I didn't either. I'm in the same boat. I didn't even know about it until we started in the show. But
did it get you excited at all to kind of check it out? Or
This has, actually. I actually am going to start looking this up and try to catch those three seasons before the new season comes out. I mean, especially on
the
Aaron
new movie comes out. There's no more seasons. Don't get us excited.
I misspoke. Especially on Aaron and Justin's recommendations. I mean, the three of you guys have recommended things to me that I never would have tried out before, and I've been rarely disappointed. So I have no problem
Jurassic
giving it a shot.
Park.
The E.T. only bad thing is that the television show is not available currently through any streaming service like Netflix or Hulu. Yeah, I think this is one of those instances where I'm okay with them making a movie for the fans. It was paid for by the fans. The fans, really helped bring it to life. So the fact that they're not bending over backwards to bring in newcomers, I don't necessarily see it as a bad thing in this instance. But who knows? The full film may have that aspect. It may be a lot better at bringing in people, but will those people be in the theaters to be brought up to speed? I don't know. We'll have to see.
I honestly think this particular trailer was done just for fans at Comic-Con.
Yeah.
That's what it was for. I think, yeah. I do believe, Brian, you're going to see a trailer that relates to anybody, because they're not going to make a movie for fans.
That's fine. I don't have much of a desire to see this, but I am excited about it, and I want it to be a huge success, because I think this is the overall premise of this is a great story. I love the fact, we've talked before about Jericho and how after the first season, they canceled it, and then the fans rose up and protested, basically, and mailed all kinds of peanuts to the studio and everything. And they actually listened and brought it back for a second season. And this is just another example of that. I love when the fans, speak and they've got a venue to voice their opinion.
All right, let's move on to one of the more popular.
Thank you.
All
right. Let's see here. Well, what do you get when you do a mashup of 300 and The Last Samurai? You get the supernatural martial arts epic 47 Ronin, which looks fantastic. Keanu Reeves is the one once again, but this time he's leading a band of masterless samurai on a mission of revenge against the person who killed their master. So, now, this is huge because 47 Ronin opens up on Christmas Day.
Mm, yeah.
And I don't know about you guys, but I got a major geek wood whenever I saw this. I don't care that Keanu is in this or not, but this thing looks awesome.
I thought it was great except when he talked. Every time he talked, I was like, what? What just happened?
I just zoned him out. I'm like, whatever.
What just happened?
He stuck out like a sore thumb to me
Yes, he did. Yeah.
I mean, a bunch of which nationality is it? Is it Japanese? Is it?
Yeah, samurai.
He just doesn't look like he fits in that
Polish
group at all. And I don't know.
Polish samurai.
It looks like a lot of action, but the story just didn't interest me. I think you got a lot more out of the story than I did from my watch. It just looked like a bunch of action to me.
Story-wise, it is very similar to 300 in the sense that it is it is based on an actual event, but it is
about
very
six of the people.
No, there was 47 Ronin and this stuff, and they did go out for revenge, but there wasn't women who are turning into dragons.
Mm. So you think, you don't know, you weren't there.
Maybe.
Shit happens.
So, like I say, it is embellished quite a bit. Let's say there are some liberties taken with this, much like 300. I don't know, Justin, what do you think about it?
I think it looks really good, and I'm a fan of Keanu Reeves. Yes, he doesn't blend in with the rest of his cast, but that's not going to throw me or make me not want to see it. I like that he's kind of getting back into these chop socky sort of films. I thought he was amazing in what he did in The Matrix, and to see him kind of get back to that, I think is more in his wheelhouse. So I'm glad to see it. And any movie that can bring a little more of Japanese history and mythology to us Westerners is a fantastic thing. So yeah, can't wait to see it. Looks really, really good and looks sharp.
Do you think women turn into dragons?
Well, it depends on what you mean by, are we talking literally or, figuratively? Just literal dragons? No. Figuratively? Yeah. Okay, yes.
Kimono dragons?
Kimono dragons?
Komodo dragon?
Komodo, whatever.
I see what you did.
No, there. Yeah.
One's a lizard, one's an outfit. Yeah, same deal.
Yeah.
I think she was wearing a kimono.
Yeah, there you go. When's it come out? Christmas Day?
Christmas Day.
Excellent.
Do you know what day that is? Do I need to actually mark it on calendar for you?
Hey, not everybody celebrates Christmas, man. That's all I'm saying.
Hey.
What if you're
most
Jewish?
But most people know the difference between a Komodo and a kimono, though. But I'm just saying. All right. Real quick. One last mention for trailers. This one did drop recently, but it is huge enough. You've probably already seen it. But if you haven't, by all means, go to thehollywoodoutsider.com. Check it out. But it is the latest trailer for The Hunger Games Catching Fire, in which we'll catch a glimpse of the fan favorite Finnick O'Dare and some of the events that lead up to Katniss and Peeta being forced to once again fight for their lives.
What?
God, that's so just wrong. They did it once already.
I'm sure it ends different.
Oh, I'm absolutely.
Yes, it does end a little differently if you've read the books.
All right. Well, hey, look, there's a lot of ways to get in touch with us. The easiest way is to call us or text us at 818-814-6246. Or if you like letters, 818-81-IMAHO. Email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Reach us on Facebook at facebook.com/thehollywoodoutsider. You can tweet us. We always love the tweets at @H_Outsider. And you can still get your official Imaho t-shirts and at thehollywoodoutsider.com.
Stump the hoe.
All right. Well, we'd never get sick of Brian talking. So we're gonna
I don't.
We're going to go to Stump the Hoe.
I don't.
Each week. Yes, you do. You definitely do. Each week, one of our hosts poses a trivia question to the remaining hosts in an attempt to stump their fellow hoes as well as you listening. This week, it is Brian's turn. So, Brian, stump us.
All right. Got one a little bit different than normal this time. Which one of these household names are not in the top five all-time earners? And we're talking about total gross, movies total gross, not how much the actors paid, but their collective movies.
Okay, do you mean adjusted or just based on
how
they
are? Oh, Jesus.
All right, go ahead.
Just go with your gut on this.
All right, go ahead.
Jesus.
God.
Almighty.
What do we worry about? Next time you're breaking out
parabolas and all kinds of other
starring roles, guest roles. They just have to appear in the film.
Oh, God. All right.
Go ahead.
Let me repeat it one more time for the rest of us who've forgotten. Anyway, which one of these household names are not in the top five of the all-time earners? And we're talking about the movies themselves, total gross, not how much the actor's getting paid.
Okay.
Johnny Depp, Harrison Ford, Eddie Murphy, Samuel L. Jackson.
Who is not in the top five?
Who is not? Which one of those is not in the top five?
Give me the list one more time.
Johnny Depp, Harrison Ford, Eddie Murphy, Samuel L. Jackson.
I'm going to say Samuel Jackson.
All right. Justin.
I'm going with Harrison Ford.
And Cranky Pants.
I'm going with Eddie Murphy.
And you will, one of you, actually none of you will be glad to know that you're right, because it's Johnny Depp.
Wow. Get the fuck out of here.
The Box Office Mojo is ranked number 8.
Wow.
Damn it. Yep. I guess Lone Ranger really did fuck him over.
What fucking movies outside of Empire Strikes Back and Star Wars did Harrison Ford?
There's an Indiana Jones trilogy.
Well, yeah, but were those huge moneymakers?
Yes, dude. They were huge. And I'm assuming this is worldwide, but...
Not to mention the Jack Ryan movies.
Yeah, Jack Ryan. He's had a lot of franchises. He was... Are you kidding me? The 80s and 90s, he was like the box office guy.
I guess so.
Just for the record, the top five is Tom Hanks, Eddie Murphy is 2, Morgan Freeman 3rd, Harrison Ford, then Samuel L. Jackson.
How the fuck is Eddie Murphy number 2?
Shrek.
Those shit fucking movies?
Yep. People go and see him, man.
People, God. What is wrong with people? At least they came to their senses. A little late. Really
like
late.
If somebody came up and said some shitty band was the top grossing. What's that fucking band with Chad Kroeger?
Nickelback. Kroger?
Yeah, Nickelback, the greatest earning band of all time. I would have to just fucking just slip my own stomach open.
Are they the
Spooku
are they,
style?
Are they the biggest fucking band ever? Nickelback?
No.
Oh,
I
God.
Hope not.
I almost cried.
I'm about to kill myself.
Jesus. I would stop listening to music. Living Color's
oddly,
in there, though.
Oddly enough, Robin Williams is number 9.
I believe that. For like the 80s and 90s, he was pretty big.
Yeah.
He's pretty big. All right. Well, now let's go to the big screen where we review any new releases. Holy crap, have we seen some movies? First up is The Conjuring. Justin, what the hell is The Conjuring about?
Well, The Conjuring is this little film. I don't know if anybody saw it this weekend, but The Conjuring tells the story of Ed and Lorraine Warren having to go out and investigate a haunting at a house owned by the Perrin family, played by Ron Livingston and Lily Taylor, with 5 daughters. I cannot imagine what it must have been like to be that poor dad in the midst of all that female energy. But this small family moves into a new house, hoping to... What?
Small family?
That was sarcasm.
Well, I meant monetarily, economically speaking, you know, they're kind of just struggling to get by.
Poor people are people too, man.
Just go. He's just being a dick.
No, poor people don't count. That's right. I said it. Anyway, the parents move into this house. It's hopefully the start of a new life. Bad shit starts to happen pretty much right off the bat, and it doesn't get much better throughout the film. Guys, I wouldn't say that I have a personal history with the Warrens. I've never met them, but when I was a young lad and who actually believed in an afterlife and those sorts of things, and you know, have since put such notions back in the toy box where they belong. Sorry, Aaron. Back in the day, I was a real big reader on demonology, the occult, and those sorts of things, and Ed and Lorraine Warren were the subjects of some of the stuff that I had read. And if any of you have watched the Amityville movies, well, they also investigated the Amityville haunting. But this film concerns the parents. I was amazed at how much I thoroughly enjoyed not just the story and not just the acting, but the production of this film. It was noticeably lacking in a lot of bells and whistles that most movies these days seem to think makes things better and really just makes it worse. What did you guys think? I mean, did you like the story first off? Horror depends on having, you know, a good story that draws you in, makes you sympathetic for the character so that when bad shit happens to them, you feel it more. What did you guys think, Aaron?
Honestly, I don't really normally care for haunted house movies at all.
I love them.
They just, you know, and I respect that. There's a lot of people that do, obviously. I think it's one of the most popular horror genres. But they're so repetitive to me. It seems like everything is about a creak and a door slamming, a cat jumping out of a cupboard, you know, that kind of shit.
Right.
I was so grateful that wasn't here, but I'll get to that in a little bit when we talk about the production. I love the story. I was really intrigued by the Warrens, who they were. I wanted to learn more about them when I left. The family, the way that the movie starts, and you start seeing little by little these things happening, and it's really kind of a mystery. They kind of, it almost has like a Scooby-Doo element where, you know, you don't know what the hell's going on or why it's going on, and you really want to know why. You know, normally when these happen, you just, oh, I can't wait to see how it ends, you know. This one, I really wanted to know the backstory as to why they were haunting the house. So I really loved how they played the story out.
I'll agree with you on the story and the setup. I really enjoyed the setup and how it intrigued me to want to know what happens. I was really disappointed with how it ended up. And obviously, we're not going to go into any kind of spoilers or anything like that. But I don't want to say that I was let down. I think that because it was tied to a based on a real story kind of thing, they couldn't go in a more interesting direction. And the way it went seemed like it just wasn't super interesting for me. For me, the story was only so-so the way it ended up. But like I said, we'll get into the production stuff later. But the story itself, it didn't do it for me in the very end.
Well, but what I really appreciate about a good horror movie is, can it build tension and can it create an atmosphere. Because really, if a horror movie is just nothing but blood and slashing and those sorts of things, you kind of get numb to it. But a good horror story, like what you get here, in my opinion, or in things like Silent Hill, you get a nice slow build of tension and horror. And as it starts off, there's just this minor little thing. And then, you know, every few minutes, it kind of increases just a little and just a little. The spookiness kind of builds until you get to the point where, at least for me, grabbing my seat and actually shouting out loud when scary things happen. And Aaron mentioned that there's not a lot of boo scares. That's fantastic. I was so glad because there were a lot of opportunities where I anticipated one and it didn't show. Mm-hmm. And what that really did is it created more tension for me because I'm like, oh, God, they didn't do it this time. So they're going to do it next time. And when they don't, it just keeps like a snowball building and building. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thought they did a fantastic job with the story. Mm-hmm. But no matter how good a story is, if the performances aren't going to carry it off, then you're dead in the water. I thought the acting in this one all around was quite well done. Scotty, did the acting in this one do it for you?
It really did. It is. I'll be honest with you. It's hard to see Ron Livingston without thinking of Office Space. Like,
I agree.
It's forever burned into me with that guy.
Yeah, I'm going to need you to come in on Saturday.
Yeah, but him and Lily Taylor specifically together really sold me on a pair of parents that just really cared about their family. And there was never a moment where I didn't feel like these are genuine parents that cared about their kids and wanted nothing but the best for them. I'm not sure how to pronounce her last name. Vera Farmiga.
Farmiga
and Patrick Wilson, they were also pretty convincing, and they had their own little kind of side story. She took the serious aspect of it almost a little over dramatic. Maybe
I thought
for
she
me.
Was fantastic, yeah. Man.
But all the girls actually the daughters were really good. I don't know if you realize this. The one daughter was in White House Down. You played the daughter in White House Down as well.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
She looks like she could be.
Somebody. She could be an up-and-comer. I disagree on Vera. She's really becoming one of my favorite actresses to watch. With this and Bates Motel, she, to me, has so much range. Every beat she just nailed, as far as I was concerned. Mm-hmm. Lily Taylor, she's always good. I mean, she's kind of like an indie queen. But she has an arc that goes from 0 to 90 and then back in this movie. And she just nails it. I mean, never at any point do I think, oh, God, she is going way over, which happens a lot in these kind of movies. Mm-hmm. You know, you get somebody who's like, really, stop, you're crying, you know, you're overreacting. Not so much. Patrick Wilson, he's that guy I think should get a bigger canvas. I really think he's a really good actor. Very, mm-hmm. very, very strong. He's got great facial expressions. He's got great tics, like acting tics. Just love him. I mean, and he does so many different kinds of roles. I mean, if you saw A-Team, if you saw Insidious, if you've seen that, I mean, he's just a different guy in everything he does. Love him. I love the acting.
Yeah, I like him quite a bit. I think Vera Farmiga, what she does for me is she has a really gentle touch. And in those scenes where a little bit is required, sometimes an actor will give you a little too much. She doesn't do that. She takes it right to the edge where it needs to be and then doesn't dip into overacting or chewing on scenery. And I think she has a softness and a gentleness to her in this particular role that the character needed because she is a bit of a fragile creature. And I was glad to see she was able to carry that through on screen. But for a horror film, you know, you really need the production to work. The director needs to know exactly what he's doing. The special effects have to be just right or it might lose you. What did you guys think of, you know, James Wan? He's done a couple of horror movies, so this isn't anything new to him. How did you think of his directing? What did you think of the special effects themselves and just the overall design of this movie? It does take place back in back in 71 or so. Mm-hmm. So it definitely has to have a period look to it. What did you guys think?
I love the production design because it is in the 70s, but it never feels like it takes over the movie mm-hmm. to where it becomes a detraction. Never thought that. I felt like the entire time it's just shot in the 70s. I mean, it looks
like
it could
have taken place at any time, really.
Yeah,
it
really
worked.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they just did a really good job of not making it too important in the movie. It's really just when it happened. It's all it is.
But not a lot of froze.
Exactly. And the pacing, James Wan is one of those guys, and he did Saw and he did Insidious. And these are low budget movies that he made work on a string budget. This one is a very small budget too. And now he's
$20 million.
And he's going to do Fast and Furious 7. So I mean, he's going from 0 to 90 in a heartbeat.
Get it?
See what I said? He lives his life a quarter mile at a time. I actually was really nervous about him before, after seeing this and how he handled a lot of the scenes that are basically action scenes. I mean, there's a lot of action going on, and he handled it so well. I have no doubts about him whatsoever. He did a great mix of old effects, old practical effects, and new CGI effects, and they blended perfectly. There were several scenes where I couldn't tell if that was CGI or practical, and that to me is the best compliment in a horror movie.
I couldn't agree more. You pretty much took the words right out of my mouth. The difference between the practical and CG effects, this is really what sold me the most on this movie, is the way it was shot. The way every moment felt very creepy, like Justin said, it's not just a bunch of boo scares, and there's a lot of building of tension, and when it does get there, it does pay off, because you never really know which one it's gonna mm-hmm. get you, and it is there. I was actually surprised, and I talked to you about this before, that I didn't think it deserved an R rating. I thought it
was for general horrific elements. There's a lot of demonology in it. There's a lot of demonic elements, and mm-hmm. I agree with you.
Not a lot of cursing, not a lot of blood.
No. It's all just atmosphere. I really agree with you. It really shouldn't have been rated R personally, but you know, hey, we've gone over that stupid system 1,000 times.
And it's not hurting the box office, obviously, as we're going to see. Like most R
ratings. Yeah, it did
do.
Okay. I think it made it. It'll be all right.
I agree with you guys 100%. The only thing I would add is that the one piece of production that really fucking, even to this day, it still creeps me out. That goddamn doll.
Yeah.
I mean, you see it in the opening of this movie, and Chucky on his worst day didn't look a quarter as scary.
That is true.
As this fucking doll. It is terrifying, and every time you see it, if I had worked on that movie, I would not have been able to touch it or get near it. It's that freaky. They did such a good job of just carrying off this movie without any of it looking hokey or special effecty. It was fantastic.
And 90% of the time, it's not moving.
No,
it's never moving.
Yeah.
You never see it move. But goddamn, you know it's watching you. You know what, that demon eye is just looking into your soul.
Oh, and real quick, the score and how it was implemented, that is something that I love, because horror movies do it so wrong most of the time. This is one reason why I don't like haunted house and ghost movies, is because the entire score is usually dun 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 dun, you know,
when the violins ramp up,
yes,
to the scare.
I hate that. It drives me insane, because I already know what's going to happen long before it happens. It doesn't happen here. They do a nice build up, and the score is used where it should be. It's just well done.
Well, speaking of scores, what would you guys give this $1 to $10? What would you be willing to pay at a theater to see this one, Aaron?
If $10 full price admission, $8.50, which is really high for this kind of horror movie for me.
Scotty?
It provided a good atmosphere that a lot of horror movies really should learn from, but the story just bugged me enough to keep me from watching it multiple times, but I still give it a $6.50.
Wow. I got to go with Aaron here, a good 8.5. I want to give it a 9. I can't quite go that high, but it's the best horror movie I've seen in a theater since the Evil Dead remake.
Totally agree.
Earlier in the year. It's fantastic, creepy, old school. Love it. So there you go.
All right, Brian, we talked about this trailer either a week ago or a couple weeks ago. Only God Forgives. What the hell is this about?
And did you love it as much as Drive?
Yeah, did you like it as much as Drive? That's really what we want to know.
That's well, yes.
Well, this is the reason why I dove into this movie, was because I said, well, you know, I was let down with Drive because I expected one type of movie, and then when it wasn't that, it really just kind of ruined the taste, so to speak. So I went in this with a pretty open mind and really kind of hoping to come away liking this. And basically it's Only God Forgives is about Ryan Gosling and his brother. They kind of run this fighting / gambling ring, and Gosling's brother tries to celebrate by sexing up and killing some teenage prostitutes. Well, a teenage prostitute, I should say. So
that's what I call a Saturday night.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, or Monday.
So Brian's like, I don't waste my weekends with that shit.
So when the detective that's assigned to the case, he's kind of got this rep. He's kind of nicknamed the Angel of Death. He kind of doles out his own justice. What he does is he brings the father of the prostitute in and lets him have his way with Ryan Gosling's brother. Which is kind of an interesting way. So he basically says, whatever, just do whatever you want to do. So the guy kills him. And then this guy also says, all right, well, why did you let your daughter become a prostitute? So then cuts the guy's arm off. So,
okay then.
Yeah. It's a pretty dark, real, there's a lot of, not, I should say there's not a lot of violence, but the violence that is in there is very, very graphic.
Okay.
So, anyway, Gosling's mom, basically she says, all right, well, she flies in and basically demands him to seek revenge on the guy that killed his brother, or, you know, on the guy that killed his brother. So as far as acting goes, Gosling is just on autopilot. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, he's phoned this thing in. There's hardly any dialogue in this movie. He probably says less than 20 words.
The whole movie?
Through the whole movie.
Wow. Wow.
I mean, I should say probably has 20, I should say lines, not words, but lines. And the guy that plays the cop he's very convincing. He's real dark. You kind of you get that menacing yet fair person that he is. You know, he is really good at portraying that. But Kristin Scott Thomas is really good. This is a real different role for her. She's usually these romantic movies. She's very intense and has a, let's just say, you could interpret her relationship with her sons as being a bit wrong.
Oh, like little games of Game of Thronesy?
Maybe ish. Oh,
all right.
Overall, it looked like this whole movie reminded me of Dick Tracy.
All right.
As far as the production aspect of things goes here, you know, you got the bright yellows, bright reds. It's kind of placed against a backdrop of, you know, the pitch black shadows and stuff like that. It is, did not like this art house feel. There's a real shortage of dialogue in this movie. It's everybody's trying to tell a story with their face, so to speak. And gotcha. It's just, to me, it doesn't work. The one guy that should be doing that the whole time was the cop, the Thailand cop. So he was fantastic. But I think it would have stood out a lot more if everybody else spoke in the movie.
Speaking helps. Yeah,
it does. The soundtrack again was that probably should have been in the movie Tron, because it was just that 80s electronic.
Gotcha.
Type stuff. So it just didn't fit. Overall, this is one of the worst movies I've watched. This is probably the worst movie I've watched this year.
Whoa, wow.
Total waste of art, time, money. I'm giving it I want to give it less than a 2, but I just feel like it's almost like the opposite end of a 10. It's really hard to get a 10, so I'm going to go with a 2.
Okay. Wow.
All right. It's absolutely horrible.
So when you say Ryan Gosling is on autopilot, are you saying that as a bad thing? Like,
it sounds like it.
I mean,
yeah, yeah. I mean, like, the guy's
the
not.
The two might have been his acting. I don't know.
I don't remember the last thing that I've seen him in where I was really impressed with his acting.
Mm-hmm.
And this just kind of seems like he's just kind of phoning it in. You know, he's just there. And of course, he's trying to tell a story with his stares, and that's all he's doing is just staring the whole time. The whole time. That's all he fucking does is just stare.
But he looks
so I guess you're not going to be picking up the next Nicholas Refn film.
I mean, and that's the bad thing about this is I like a lot of his movies. Bronson was really good. Valhalla Rising is very good. Love some of his, I think he also did the Pusher trilogy.
So just get him away from Gosling is what you're saying.
I guess that's got to be. I mean, because these two together, I'm sorry, I just can't watch anymore. I just can't.
Yeah, he did do the Pusher trilogy.
So, and like I said, he's done some very good stuff, and he does
it real good.
Does make you think more in a movie. You do have to pay attention to his movies to really, I guess, catch a lot of stuff. But this was just absolutely horrible.
All right, and that's only God forgives.
Apparently, Brian doesn't.
He forgets, but he never forgives. RIPD. I saw RIPD. That stands for the Rest in Peace Department. And basically, it's Rooster Cogburn and Van Wilder play Men in Black. When Nick, who's played by Ryan Reynolds, he unexpectedly is gunned down during a drug bust gone bad. He ends up partnered in the afterlife with Roy, who's played by Jeff Bridges. They are the guys who apparently go after the spirits who are in hiding, you know, these monsters. The guys that refuse to go back where they're supposed to, which I assume is hell, but they never actually refer to it as heaven or hell. So they're sent by Proctor, who's played by Mary Louise Parker. They end up stumbling on some bigger plot where the dead have found a way to free all the other monsters and, of course, wreak havoc to the world. Whatever. It's Men in Black 4 is all it is, but that's beside the point. Ryan Reynolds, he actually surprised me. He's very restrained. He's not playing his usual sarcastic, wisecracking shit.
He's not playing Van Wilder cop.
Exactly. He's not. But he actually has an arc where, I mean, he realizes he's dead and it's actually taking a toll on him. It doesn't necessarily fit with the scope of the movie, but he's trying. He does an admirable job. Bridges is fucking Rooster Cogburn. I thought by the trailer it would be a joke once I saw it, but no, it's Rooster Cogburn the entire movie through. But if you like True Grit, it entertains, man. It really does. And Kevin Bacon's in the movie. I don't recall him being in any trailer.
I don't either. Did
anybody else know Kevin Bacon was in this movie besides Kevin Bacon?
I had heard that he was in it, but I didn't see him in any of the trailers.
That'll help with the 6 Degrees game.
Yeah, it will. Yeah, absolutely. He was really good. I mean, the actors were all really good. The performances were very strong. What I didn't like is the cheesy and piss poor special effects. I understand they were going for like a cartoony look, you know, which is very reminiscent of Men in Black. They were really going for the Men in Black look. They should have totally went with different designs because there's two things. One, the designs are very reminiscent of Men in Black, so all you can think about is how much better Men in Black effects were done back in 1997. And you also keep feeling like it's ripping off another film. That's really what it does. I really believe if they would have used different effects and different designs for the dead, this would have been a much better movie because the performances are entertaining. The action's really good, but every time they have a major special effect, it just drops you out of the movie. It just sucks you right out of it. Robert Schwenke also directed Red. He did a really good job with the pacing. The movie is like the perfect length. Seriously, it's 96 minutes or something like that. The perfect length. It's not one of these normal Hollywood blockbusters where the director can't cut parts. He edited it. I mean, he tightened it up. It's really just the special effects. It just feels like something's too repetitive. But it's entertaining throughout. It is short. I like that.
How's the comedy?
The comedy, parts of it were really funny. Parts of it were really stupid. So, I mean, it wasn't great, but it definitely had its moments. They actually play off each other pretty well as the movie goes on. And Jeff Bridges, even though he's just doing the same guy, which I think he's going to do the same guy for Seventh Son, too. It's entertaining. So I give it a 6 out of 10. I didn't love it, but I liked it, and I would have liked to have seen it if there were just for a little bit better performances. Now, Wolverine, I've also seen Wolverine, and you can check my review out on our website. It should be up by the time you listen to this, and I'm going to do it like a sneak peek because these guys will cry if they can't talk about Wolverine next week. It's one of the ones they've been waiting on all summer. So here's all I'm going to say. Wolverine goes to Japan. The guy wants to meet him before he dies, and he gets caught up in a huge issue that ends up he's trying to fight immortality and a lot of things. I absolutely love it. It's a great movie, and it's the Wolverine movie I've always wanted to see. So what I will tell you is it's very grounded in reality. It's not a typical Marvel movie. It's very, and I'm not saying it's as good as Dark Knight, but it's in the same kind of world as Dark Knight as opposed to like a Iron Man or Spider-Man, where it's very glossy and over-realized. I mean, it seems like a real world. Love the choices they made with it. I really liked where they went with it. gets a little over the top near the end, but it's still, I still loved it. So I gave it a 9 out of 10. Please read my review on the website. But we'll talk about it more next week, more in detail, and everybody can kind of share their thoughts. Now let's go to box office. The Conjuring, which we talked about earlier, $41.8 million. It's already doubled its budget.
In first week.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
No, that's not bad. I would really love to see like a Warren mystery series or something.
Would they have to redo Amityville again?
No, skip Amityville. There's got to be other stories that we haven't heard. You know.
Oh, gosh. I mean, they say they've investigated like 12,000 hauntings. Some, you know, most of them actually not being a haunting. And that's one of the things that I like to I'm not going to go back to the review. But, yeah, there's plenty more to dig into.
Mm-hmm. I really would like to see that. Despicable Me 2, $24.9 million, dropped $43 million, and it's $276 million. Turbo, $21.3 million. Brian, you actually saw it, but didn't seem like he really wanted to review it, which is pretty funny. He's like, I don't really give a fuck.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Was it worth anything?
No, it's not. It's just, it's what you expect from a movie like that. If you've got kids and they really want to see it, they'll enjoy it. It's, you're not missing much. It's not nearly on the lines of like Toy Story or The Incredibles or anything like that. It's just a semi-entertaining cartoon.
Gotcha.
That's too bad, because then we could have called this episode Turbos. What?
Justin's always thinking. Grown Ups 2, $19.8 million. So it dropped 52%. It's made $79 million. It's kicking Pacific Rim's ass. Shame on you, America.
Dumb fuckers.
What the fuck?
I don't get it. Just don't get it.
Red 2.
Dumb fucking idiots.
Red 2. Hey, I paid for it. Shut up.
I rest my case.
Red 2, $18 million, which is less than the first Red. And Bruce Willis is not having a good year because Die Hard. The last I heard didn't do very well either.
He's probably doing better than Ryan Reynolds right now.
Yeah, Ryan Reynolds had two flops in a weekend. Congratulations.
That's gotta suck.
Hey, he still goes home to Scarlett Johansson. What are you doing?
Oh, the God. All right, well played, sir.
Pacific Rim, $16 million, dropped 57%.
It's actually, even though it went up 10 theaters.
Mm-hmm. It's actually not bad, though. A bad drop for that.
How's
kind of
money.
How's
it doing overseas, though?
It's making some money overseas. It's like over $100 million.
Is it? Okay?
But I think they're waiting on the Asian markets. That's really where it's going to decide. If China's huge, well, you're hoping. We'll see. But it's only made $68 million. There's a good chance it won't make $100 million here.
Let's hope the rest of the world makes up for the dumb fucks in this country.
R.I.P.D. Oh, Ryan Reynolds. $12.6 million. The movie cost $130 million. They can bitch about Lone Ranger all they want. This is a real flop. So there's a lot of big budget movies not doing so well this summer. Mm-hmm.
All right, folks. Well, this week we have got three films we're going to be talking about coming up on August 2nd. The first one, Europa Report. It's a science fiction thriller directed by Sebastian Cordero and starring Charlotte Copley, Michael Nevquist, and Daniel Wu. Yeah, I don't really recognize any of them either. An international crew of astronauts undertakes a privately funded mission to search for life. Life.
Space life.
Search for a life on the moon Europa, which is the fourth largest moon of Jupiter. Scotty, I know Brian has seen this, and he'll talk about it next week, but do you think you're going to be heading out to theaters to see this movie, or is that a journey you're just not willing to take?
I actually am very interested in this movie. This is my kind of movie. I love space exploration. I love where it seems like it's based in reality a little bit. Obviously, it's a little cliche with the we're exploring and something bad happens. But I mean, when you see, I've never seen a movie where in the titles and they're doing the different quotes from different magazines and stuff. I've never seen popular science. As giving a good recommendation, and to me, as silly as it sounds, that to me makes me want to see it more,
because that piques your interest.
It does. It makes it sound like it's going to be actual scientifically accurate. Now, obviously, we're not traveling to Jupiter, but it's gonna make sense. It's gonna seem real.
It's gonna seem grounded in some kind of realism.
Right. So for that, I'm really excited to see it.
I'm interested. I don't know about excited. It's one of those where I'll hold my judgment. I like Charlotte Copley, so I really will watch it, but I don't know if I'll if I'll run out to see it.
It's hard to see him and not think of the A-Team.
I'm more of a District 9 guy, but I see what you're saying there.
I'm interested in it as a sci-fi guy.
Aren't you like legally required to go see it?
I'd like to rent it on iTunes. I don't know if I need to go to a theater to see it, but I'm interested enough that I'll definitely be checking it out. I don't know if I want to go to a theater to see it though, but yeah, interest is there.
Well, come back next week and you're gonna hear Brian's review.
I'm waiting with bated breath.
Absolutely.
You want to give us a preview, Brian?
I'll give you a very little teaser.
Give me just a tip.
Just a tip. There is an element in this movie that reminded me, and I'm assuming it will be everybody when they see it, that it reminds me of The Matrix.
You just sold Justin.
Now suddenly he bought every copy. Matrix 1 or Matrix 2? Because that's a really important distinction.
Because the second one is better.
Fuck you. We lose half our audience every time you say that. I'm just letting you know.
We don't have many halves left.
That's how many times you said it.
All right, folks. The second film. I know this is the big one that everybody's been wanting to see. The Smurfs team.
There's kids there.
This is a CGI cartoon and live-action mixed comedy that's directed by Raja Gosnell, who also directed big hits such as Big Mama's House, Scooby-Doo, Beverly Hills Chihuahua, and the first Smurfs film. So quality right up front. The film, which stars Neil Patrick Harris and who gives a fuck else, is about a new group of stupid little creatures called the Naughties, and no one cares about the rest. You don't go to these movies to be entertained by the plot. Fuck, I'm sounding like a hater on this one. Aaron, please talk so that I can actually seem kindly again.
It's about the Smurfs. And once again, they are not in wherever, Smurfsville, whatever it is. Why can't they stay in their fucking hometown? Why do they got to keep going to New York City or wherever, the America?
I don't know. I didn't see the first one. I'm assuming they're stuck here for some ungodly reason.
You missed out.
Gargamel, you bastard.
And was it Hank Azaria?
Hank Azaria, yeah.
He's so bad at this role. Just leave. Fire him. Get somebody else.
He was a great Blue Raja, but he sucks as...
Oh, yes. He was great Blue Raja.
He was a great Blue Raja.
Didn't expect to see you, so Spoon.
That's probably funnier than the whole fucking Smurf
series. I love the cartoon, but man, I just, until they commit to being back in Smurf's land, I would see a CGI Smurf. I would actually go to a theater and see a CGI Smurf movie. An entire, CGI animated.
Yeah.
Not this mixed shit. She was a Raja, whatever the fuck her name is, did this shit with Scooby-Doo. You fucked up my childhood once. I'm not going to let you do it again. I have no desire. Done. You already... Scooby-Doo, I'm still bitter about.
The porn version of Scooby-Doo is much better.
What?
Hey, Velma.
Trust me.
It is. Not that I've seen it, because I don't watch that.
No, I've seen it. Fuck it, I'll own that. I'll put my name on it. And it's better. All right, the last film.
Even the CGI is better.
Two Guns. Now, this is an action movie directed by Baltazar Kormakur and starring Mark Wahlberg and Denzel Washington. A DEA agent and an undercover naval intelligence officer who have been tasked with investigating one another find they have been set up by the mob, the very organization the two men believed that they had been stealing money from. Brian, this one looks like a lot of fun, but I think the trailer for it pretty much showed me every relevant plot beat, including the ending. Do you think this one's still worth watching, or should we just give it a double tap and call it a day?
No, I'm pretty sure this will just be the pick here. It's like you said earlier, I've already seen Europa Report, and chances are I'm probably not going to go see the Smurfs 2. I think I've hit my cartoon quota for the year.
You put so in your time.
I've got it out of the way. So by default, I would probably have to pick Two Guns here. I mean, that being said, I think you're right. I think it is one of those where they show the whole movie in a 2-minute trailer, including the dramatic explosion at the end with the cool guy walking away from it, or cool guys in this case walking away from it. And it's like, really? You showed me the whole damn movie. I would be amazed if like everything in this happened in the first 30 minutes of the movie. And then the rest of it is just finding out what, wow, now what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So It looks real cookie cutter, really.
I still want to see it.
Really?
I'm normally, you know, I'm the first one to say Mark Wahlberg can't act, because he can't. But he looks really good in this. Him and Denzel just seem like a good team. And I love buddy movies and buddy action movies. So seriously, it doesn't take much to win me over in that kind of stuff. And I think he's a good action star. I just don't find him that good of an actor.
See, I think it looks funny, but it's nothing I want to rush out to the theater to see. That's like a rental for me for sure.
I like people getting shot.
Do you think there's going to be a moment where Denzel Washington goes, I'm too old for this shit?
That would
be worth the admission.
That would be worth it.
That would be worth the price of admission. I am all for that. I think it looks good.
Yeah. The even though the trailers did, I think, ruin just about every spoiler moment this film might have had, the ease with which Mark Wahlberg and Denzel Washington worked together was really nice. And Denzel, when he has the charm turned on, it is turned on, and he's really good. So I will see it. I don't know if I'm going to rush out to the theaters opening weekend to see it, but I have enough interest, and more importantly, my wife has enough interest to go see it that I might actually see this one in theaters. But guys, of these three movies, Europa Report, The Smurfs 2, and Two Guns, which one are you most likely to see? Brian pretty much said Two Guns. I'm assuming you didn't want to see The Smurfs 2. It sounded that way.
No. Two Guns. Seriously, put it in fucking Smurfsville or wherever that place is, and I will go see it. But you keep bringing New York into it, I'm done. Nope, Smurfs 2. Or Two Guns. Shit.
The one with two in it, but not Smurf.
Exactly. And Smurfette, make her hot again. Go ahead.
Again?
Hey, when I was a kid, I don't know why I liked
really?
Smurfette.
When was she hot
first time? She was hot when I was like 10. I don't know why. I wanted a blue blonde chick creepy. For some reason.
I don't know what to get Aaron
like
for Christmas.
Yeah. Blue makeup and a blonde wig. That'll do it.
Whoa.
Yeah, you'd think you'd like Avatar more. No blondies, but a lot of blue. What about you, Scotty?
I actually want to see Europa Report, especially after Brian piqued my interest with his little tease earlier.
Yeah, I got to say, of these three films, I think Europa Report is personally the more interesting film. So we're going to split this one down the middle. Scotty and I are going to go off hand in hand to watch Europa Report, and you two guys can, I don't know, do whatever it is you two do when you're in a theater.
Man packing.
Oh, man packing.
Pack
packing. All right, you can always hear us on iTunes, your Stitcher Radio app. Please give us a thumbs up or rate us on iTunes. If wherever it is you listen, just give us something.
You know, they can't see you do a thumbs up.
I know, I just did do a thumbs up. It's a visual cue. But if you listen to Stitcher, please click the little thumbs up button. If you listen through iTunes or your iPod, just go to the site and give us a 5-star review. We appreciate it. Justin especially, and his ego needs feeding on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
We're also across the pond now at audioboo.com, so check that out. And our RSS feed is at thehollywoodoutsider.com. New episode every Thursday.
What's this movie?
What's this movie? Each week we play ours, where a listener suggests a clip from a movie, and if you think you know what the clip is, email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Tweet us or Facebook us the answer, and next week we'll give you a proper host shout-out. Last week, it was Brian's turn, and he picked 16 Candles. Those that got it correct, Stephen F., Michelle L., Scott M., Sean M., and Tammy, congratulations, guys. Nice job.
What's happening, stuff?
No more Yankee, my winky.
The Tonga need food.
You bitches need help. This week it's a listener's turn, and this one is really freaking hard. So if you know it, here's your clip.
Well, what listener?
Oh, yeah, I didn't say that, did I? Rob R. Sorry.
So I'm assuming this is the guy running in it, or?
Yeah, there's some running.
Is it just going to be the sound of weights clanking?
Here you go. Here's your clip.
I'd like to speak to Mr. Dickens. No, I don't think you want to do that. I insist on speaking to Mr. Dickinson, sir.
You insist?
I insist.
You insist?
Yes, I do.
All right, now let's go to TV and home video news. SIFI, or sci-fi, however you want to call it, is bringing two different kinds of projects to the network, and apparently they've dusted off their quality control department because they finally have something interesting. The first one is 12 Monkeys. It's going to be a TV adaptation of the Bruce Willis, Brad Pitt time travel movie. Scott, as a fan, is that something you want to see every week?
I can't decide because I've obviously seen the movie. I know, and what really sold me on that movie was the twist ending that I didn't see coming. That's the reason that I recommend that movie to people. Terry Gilliam is one of those filmmakers that makes just twisted worlds, kind of. And I do kind of like that, but I just don't know if this, as a series, as a weekly thing, is going to have the same charm as a 2-hour movie, especially without Brad Pitt and Bruce Willis in it. What do you think? Are you stoked for it?
No.
You didn't like the? Did you not like the movie?
I love the movie. I think the movie's great, and honestly, one of Brad Pitt's best performances ever.
Mm-hmm.
And even Bruce Willis was really good, but I don't see how you do it every week.
Yeah,
I really don't. I mean. Justin, you love this kind of shit. Is that something you want?
As an ongoing series, no. If they were to do like a mini-series version of it, yeah, I'd be interested. But I mean, the more they stretch it out, the more fluff they're going to have to put in. So a story like that works best when it's self-contained.
Okay. All right, then. And the second one, this one sounds really interesting. Warriors of Oz. It just sounds really cool. And Timber Bekmambetov. Yeah, I don't know why I can come close to saying that correctly. Timber Bekmambetov. No problem, but apparently any other name I can't do right. He helmed Wanted and The True Story of Abraham Lincoln.
The True Story?
He's putting together this miniseries about a present-day hero that's transported to future Oz, where he teams up with Heartless, Brainless, and Coward to thwart the evil wizard. Did you have a nerdgasm, B?
Yeah, it's... Well, I'll tell you what. It's tempered a little bit. I mean, my net excitement here is probably about a 6 to a 7 on a scale of 10. It's as much of a homer as I am for Timber. It's not timber. That's what you yell when you're cutting trees.
They say timber.
Yeah, you've been saying timber. So, oh man. Yeah, as much of a homer as I am for him, any series on Siffy scares me.
Did I say timber? Yeah. Fuck. Sorry.
Yeah, and it was funny. It's like, yeah, I can say Timber Bekmambetov, but I can't say anybody else's name.
I put a B in it for some reason. So, what was it? What's your point? I forgot what your fucking point was. Oh,
weren't even listening.
I try not to listen to you most of the time because it takes so long for you to talk. Is it you don't?
It's anything that sci-fi does just scares me because for the most part. Most of their TV shows are crap. I'm sorry. They are. I've tried to watch shows like Warehouse 13. I think is a great premise. I just think they ruin it. There's been a few successes out there, but for the most part, I just can't latch on to any of them. Eureka was interesting for a little while, but just tends to, I just kind of faded away from it. I hope they do a better job with it, especially if Tim Beck or whatever.
Bekmambetov.
Yeah. If especially with him kind of at the helm. Hmm. So
yeah, I gotta agree with Brian. I mean, anything not called Battlestar Galactica sci-fi is pretty well shit on. Even the spinoffs to Battlestar haven't been as good as they should have been, though I did like Blood and Chrome quite a bit. But this being a miniseries and not a premise that they can just beat over and over and over again the way that they did Eureka and Warehouse 13, making it self-contained, making it short. They got a focus. They know where it ends and begins. That's good. I love the premise, and I'm curious to see how this one turns out. It'll be one of the few sci-fi properties that I will actually be looking forward to. Most of the time, I'm just kind of bored or worse.
Let's go to DVD and Blu-rays. Scotty.
All right, we're looking for releases of July 30th. The first one is G.I. Joe Retaliation, not Annihilation.
Not Annihilation.
Aaron told me to make sure to mention G.I. Joe Annihilation. Annihilation.
Whatever it's called.
Is that
called.
The third one?
What's this other one? Asshole on Wall Street?
And Black Hawk? No. What?
Well, before
what
we
kind
get...
of movies were you reviewing that?
Anyway, G.I. Joe Retaliation. The G.I. Joes are not only fighting their mortal enemy, Cobra, they are forced to contend with threats from within the government that jeopardize their very existence. Stars Dwayne Johnson, Channing Tatum, and Bruce Willis. This is one that we actually all four saw. We reviewed on episode 87. Aaron gave it a 6 out of 10, Justin a 750. I gave it a 550, and Brian gave it a 750. Next up is Assault on Wall Street. This one has Dominic Purcell, who plays Jim, an average New Yorker living a peaceful life with a well-paying job and a loving family. Suddenly, everything changes when the economy crashes, causing Jim to lose everything. Filled with anger and rage, Jim snaps and goes to extreme lengths to seek revenge for the life taken from him.
Did he kill his brother, Michael Scofield?
Shut up. One of these times I'm going to go back and watch that fourth season in the movie. And
it's
then,
so good until the
and
end.
And then maybe that joke like won't be funny anymore. But and lastly, we've got Black Rock. Three childhood friends set aside their personal issues and reunite for a girls' weekend on a remote island off the coast of Maine. One wrong move turns their weekend getaway into a deadly fight for survival. This one's actually directed by Katie Asselton. Asselton. She's from The League.
Don't look at me for answers.
Yeah, it's true. She plays in the FX series The League, so she actually starred and directed, and it also has Lake Bell and Kate Bosworth in it as well.
Is she the brunette wife?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. She's kind of cute.
Yeah, she is kind of cute.
She is pretty cute.
Ooh, yeah. Hit me with that unknown shit. Flashback.
And with that, we'll move to our flashback segment. This is where each week one of us hoes brings to the table a little known or obscure movie that we'd like the rest of you, as well as those hoes listening here, to give a chance. And this week it is Justin's turn. So, Justin, what do you have for us?
This week I'm going to go back to the TV. Well, there are just so many shows that not enough people watch, and I like to try and let people know about it so they can try and see them now, even though it doesn't help. I'm not going to bring back the show. But back in 2005, do any of you guys, does the name Anthony Bourdain mean anything to you?
Yeah, the reservations guy.
Yeah, the cook.
Yeah, he's a world famous chef.
I'm sorry, but borderline, he's a cook. Like, he could work at Denny's too.
Maybe. He'd probably be a little overqualified, but yeah.
He's sure overqualified to make an omelet? Fuck that.
Anyway, Anthony Bourdain had published a book. It's a New York Times bestseller called Kitchen Confidential: Adventures in the Culinary Underbelly. In 2005, they put out a television show called Kitchen Confidential, and it starred a younger Bradley Cooper playing a character called Jack Bourdain. It was a very short-lived show. It was only on the air for about 3 months.
That was really good. Yeah.
A sum total of 13 episodes were produced. It is a crime that this show did not get more views. It was very well written, so funny. A total comedy taking place in the back kitchen of an up-and-coming restaurant with Bradley Cooper playing a character who had once been a noted chef but had gone into kind of disgrace, and now he was going to come back through this restaurant. Co-starring with him, fans of Buffy had Nicholas Brendon, who played Xander on Buffy. He played a pastry chef. Frank Langella played the owner of the restaurant. And then they had a bunch of people around him playing sous chefs and the like. But very funny, sharply written, a very pretty show. All in all, it was one of those shows that when I saw the first episode, I was like, all right, I can get into this. And every episode maintained that or got better. And then when it was canceled like 3 months later, I wouldn't say I was devastated, but I was really disappointed. The show is available on DVD right now. Unfortunately, that's the only avenue it's available in. So if you can find it somewhere to rent, do so. I'm sure you could buy it for cheap, cheap, cheap. And I recommend you do. It's only 13 episodes, so you're not investing a whole lot of time, but it's worth it. Every episode's 22 minutes. They're funny. And I wish it would have lasted longer, but it did not harm Bradley Cooper's career, which, is nice. But it's a fun series, and give it a shot.
I actually love that comedy, but I'm glad it got canceled because it gave me The A-Team and Silver Linings Playbook and The Hangover.
I didn't look it up, but I wonder how long after that series ended in December 5th, 2005, how long after that did he start getting roles in movies? Because I know that when I saw the show,
I think he did.
I knew him
from
Alias, but that was it.
I think he did Wedding Crashers shortly after or around that time. So
okay,
and that's when his career started.
Oh yeah,
beat up.
Mm-hmm. Totally forgot.
You forgot he was in Wedding Crashers.
Yeah, he was.
He's so good.
He was a jackass in that movie.
He's a jackass in every movie, but he's so good. Okay, let's go to From the Outside In. This week we've got, well, actually two topics. One from a listener about ensemble films, but we'll get to that in a second. The first is from Scotty McMusic.
is that his real name?
Yeah, that's what Scott's DJ name is.
No, it's not.
Or DJ Slick, as he's sometimes known. What songs, not score, songs, are forever branded for you, as in whenever or wherever you hear them, your brain instantly associates it with a movie or a TV show, for better or worse? Justin.
Oh, God. Yeah, I made a list.
So did I.
The songs.
So did I.
I'm not going to go through all of them. I'll give you a couple. Maybe you'll come back to me and I'll give you a few more. I really cannot hear a Rage Against the Machine song and not think of The Matrix.
Yep.
They ended the first movie with, I think all three films ended with a Rage song, and forever after, it doesn't matter what song that I'm hearing, I am thrust right back into The Matrix.
Wake Up was so apropos for the end of that first movie.
Oh, absolutely appropriate, and it forever tied it to it.
Do you have like a Neo tattoo on your fucking back somewhere? Maybe next to your lightsaber tattoo?
No. Who told you? Damien Rice has got two songs that do this for me, one in a movie, one in a television show. He has a song called Blower's Daughter. I cannot hear it without thinking of the movie Closer. It first hit me when they did the trailer for the film and they played the song, but then in the end of the movie, you hear that song played. And every time I hear it, I just see... oh, God, Amidala. What the hell? Why can I not remember her name?
Natalie Portman.
Natalie Portman, thank you. I see her walking in slow motion down the street. And the second song of Damien Rice's is a song called Delicate. And they used to play it quite often in the first season of Lost whenever Hurley would put in his headphones, put on his headphones with a CD player. This was a song more often than not he was listening to. And I always kind of go back to it. And the last one I'll mention here is the traditional American folk song, Man of Constant Sorrow.
Oh, there you
I
go.
Don't think anybody can hear that song and not think of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Mm-hmm. Yep, I would agree with that.
Spot on, by the way. That was...
Yeah, you're welcome. That's what I do. That's what
I thought
I
he
did.
Was talking to me and my choices.
Well, those were too, yeah. But
no, absolutely. What about you, Brian? Because I know Scott has like 47 of them. So
yeah, mine will be pretty short here. One is because actually the a lot of the songs that first came to me, I did some had to do some digging to make sure they were not made for the soundtrack. They were actually extra songs that were added to.
Explain what he's talking about so people don't go, why did you say Danger Zone?
We're picking songs that were not specifically from a film. Some of our listeners have already given us some that are from a film. I'm not knocking that at all. We're just saying, for us, that's what we're talking about.
Not written for
the movie. Yep.
Right. So it may be in the movie, but it wasn't, or maybe, but it wasn't part of the soundtrack or what have you.
Well, it could be a part of the soundtrack, but it wasn't written specifically for right, like Danger Zone was written for Top Gun.
Like all the music from That Thing You Do was written for That Thing
I
You
think
Do.
People got it. We got smart listeners. Outside of Brian, because he doesn't listen.
Huh?
All right, go ahead, Brian.
First one is an old one. And that's Mrs. Robinson by Simon and Garfunkel.
Mm, good one.
Nice.
It was actually written, they actually kind of took part of it for the movie, but they didn't even finish the song until afterwards.
Yeah, so. The Sound of Silence is also one in the same movie.
Yeah.
Hello, Darkness, Oh, My Old Friend.
It's yep.
Like, good choice.
We know
the movie being The Graduate, so classic movie there. Another one is a song that was actually supposed to be covered, it was intended to be covered by Billy Idol. But instead, Simple Minds ended up recording.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody remembers the fist bump or fist pump. I should say not fist bump, but fist pump from Judd Nelson in The Breakfast Club. So,
what was the title of that song? I think I actually talked over it.
Don't You Forget About Me by Simple Minds.
Forget About Me.
Can you imagine Billy Idol doing that song?
I say mo.
No, I can't. I really can't. But I can imagine him like pumping his fist while he's saying it.
Yep.
Still to this day.
I mean, those are, like I said, those are about the only two I got right now. That okay. Like I said, there was a few others, but I'm not even really sure if they were, done for the movie or later. So,
well, my number, we'll get to you, Scott. Don't worry. My number one, stuck in the middle of you. I mean, seriously, Reservoir Dogs. There's no fucking way that song can play, and I love it.
That's a good call.
I love that song. I can't hear it without thinking of Michael Madsen cutting a guy's ear off.
Yeah. Hello.
Yeah. Hello. That's definitely my number one. Sympathy for the Devil and Fallen. And I know Sympathy for the Devil has been around forever. That's a Rolling Stone song. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, when I saw it in Fallen, it just creeped me the fuck out.
Yeah.
Because it basically plays the every whole time. Yeah, oh, my God. It's just so well done. That even though good. The movie's just okay, that element to that movie was absolutely great. And Closer from Seven. Closer makes me think of Seven.
Oh, okay.
Because it was really used in, you remember the movie, What's in the Box? The movie Seven. Closer is using that. And for whatever reason, whenever that plays, even though I love that song, it makes me think of a couple other things. I always think of Seven, which is probably a bad thing, but I still think about it. What about you, Scott?
I actually made a separate list. I made a list that I was going to guess that you were going to bring up, and I only got one of them. There was two that I was expecting you to say and that you didn't.
Okay. But, so you made a list for my list?
I made a list of ones that I was going to guess that you were going to say. But anyway.
What's the other one that I didn't say?
I was expecting to say XLF from Beverly Hills
Cop. That was written for Beverly Hills Cop.
Was it?
Okay. Otherwise, I would have.
I didn't know that. And then
I thought about The Heat Is On, too, but that was actually, I don't know.
Well, in that sense, the other one was, too, so never mind. I'll go right to mine. I have a whole bunch as well, but I'll keep it short unless we come back around like Justin said. The first one is the Foo Fighters did a song called Hero. And that is a song that I cannot hear without thinking of Varsity Blues. It was used in that movie, and it just, I hear that song and I think about football. Just to this day, it's such an awesome song. Another one is All on the Watchtower, which has had many iterations, but they used a version of it in Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, shit, how did I not think of that?
And even though that version in Battlestar Galactica is vastly different from like the original version, I hear any version of that song now, and I get goosebumps thinking about that finale of that. I think it was season 3.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. this one's funny, but the song Build Me Up Buttercup will forever be something about Mary. Can't think about that one. Another one, Elton John's Tiny Dancer. It was an Almost Famous.
Oh, Almost Famous.
And
yeah,
that was
fantastic.
Such a great scene, because the scene in the movie is everybody's all just pissed off at each other. They've been fighting, and somebody just starts singing the song, and by the halfway through the song, everybody is singing it on, and all worries are forgotten. Just so good. The last one I'll say right now then is there's a at the end of Fight Club, right before they go into the credits, there's a Pixies song that plays called Where Is My Mind.
Okay.
And that was the first time I had never heard a Pixies song before that. So that was my first introduction to that band. And I actually saw a cover band recently that played that song. And it's just instantly I'm seeing the end credits to Fight Club. So.
Good call.
Awesome.
Scott, or Justin, did you have a couple? Did you have more, Scott? I'm sorry.
I do, but I'll let Justin do this.
Can I squeeze one in here?
Absolutely. These bitches will talk forever. So go ahead.
All right. I don't know how any of us missed this, but Bohemian Rhapsody.
It's on my list, yeah.
How did it, I mean, you know.
What movie?
Yeah, what movie? What movie,
Wayne's,
Brian?
Wayne's World.
Well, some people may not know.
That's true. I honestly don't like that movie, so it doesn't really make me think
of
it.
But that's a great moment in the movie.
It is a great moment in the movie. But even still,
somebody has to do is sit there and play the air drums and then pause, and then you know what they're doing.
Yep. Let me go.
Fair enough. Justin, you have any more?
Yeah, I got a few. AC/DC's Shoot to Thrill opened up Iron Man 2. Mm. I really, almost at this point, I can't hear any AC/DC songs anymore without thinking of Iron Man. They played some in the first film. They played some in the second. Oddly enough, I don't remember a single AC/DC song in the third film, but they did play, I think it was also Shoot to Thrill, in the Avengers for a brief little moment. So I think the entire Iron Man 2 soundtrack was nothing but AC/DC. there's a movie called Singles that Cameron Crowe did that is chock-a-block full of fantastic songs. But my favorite two that are on there, Pearl Jam's Breath is fantastic, and Smashing Pumpkins' Drown, neither of which were written for the film, but they were B-sides for earlier works. I cannot hear either of those without being taken right back into that movie. And the last one I'll say is Filter has a song called Hey Man, Nice Shot.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
That whenever I hear it, it always reminds me of an X-Files episode called DPO. It's the one where a kid gets struck by lightning and it gives him the ability to electrocute others. In that episode, they play this song to fantastic effect. And I always think of that episode.
I actually think of Tales from the Crypt Demon Night.
Oh, that too.
Is it sad? Oh, because they played that song. Because that song was like an everything for a short period of time. And those are the two things that I remember it most from. Yeah,
I mean, we could go on and on with Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction.
Go ahead, Scott. Finish your list. I've got one more that I was saving for last.
Oh, okay. Johnny B. Goode, Back to the Future.
Oh, goddamn, yes.
That's just, you can't but not picture Michael J. Fox just like crawling around the floor and stuff. How about, I don't even know what you call this song, but the song that they play in Beetlejuice, the Day-O.
Day-O.
You know,
Caribbean song.
Yeah, the banana.
Yeah, Harry Belafonte.
Yeah.
That's another one too. The other Harry Belafonte song in there.
That was the same artist.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yep.
And last one. Last one I've got is an Alanis Morissette song, "Uninvited." It was in the City of Angels soundtrack.
Oh yeah.
And that came out like my senior year of high school or something, and it was on the radio all the time. And I loved that movie back then. And
God, did you ever get laid?
Oh, no. The Goo Goo Dolls' Iris was so much better in that movie.
That was written for that movie, though.
Was it? Because I remember it came out on one of their albums, too. But maybe that was after the movie.
Yeah, I think it was. Because that's one that was, I think they were, I don't know. I'm not a music aficionado.
Fantastic song, though.
Mm-hmm. My last one, and I wanted to save it for last one. You guys can name a couple more if you want. But Percy Sledge, you know that song, When a Man Loves a Woman?
Mm-hmm.
To this day, Moonlighting was like, I've said it many times, one of my favorite shows. To this day, I cannot hear that song and not think about those two kissing. And that sounds almost as gay as what you just said, Scott. But
what's wrong with City of Angels?
For whatever reason, when I was their romance, when they finally commenced, and that song was a real big part of that show. It just makes me weepy.
Yeah.
Every time I hear it, I get all mopey.
I just thought of one, and I'll end it on this one.
You just have to be fucking last, don't you?
Well, I just thought of it when Scotty mentioned Johnny B. Goode. It made me think of Little Richard. Long Tall Sally in Predator, when they're on that helicopter and that Little Richard song is playing in the background as they're all kind of gearing up to drop into the jungle.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
All right.
Oh, shit. And every time I hear that song, I'm like, I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus.
Well, here's some from some of our listeners. Stephen White is Stuck in the Middle with You from Reservoir Dogs, which, damn right, that's what
Little
should
Green
be.
Bag is one of those songs from that movie that I always kind of think of, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, Quentin Tarantino, pretty much every movie of his has some song that's going to be remembered. Scott M., Don't You Forget About Me, The Breakfast Club. Also, Betty R., same movie, or same song. Justin V., Miserilou from Pulp Fiction.
That's Dick Dale.
Yep. Carlos Hernandez, Danger Zone. I don't know. I'm sorry, Carlos. I say every Spanish name with an accent. It's just the way I am.
Carlos
Hernandez. Danger Zone, Top Gun. Reese Bennett, Big Empty, or The Cure's cover of Burn. Always make me think of The Crow.
Oh, God. Big Empty was so good in The Crow. That's
Burn is probably one of my top 10 favorite songs ever, honestly.
Well, who did Big Empty? That was Stone Temple Pilots. Mm-hmm. That and the Toadies, they did Paper Dress for The Crow, too. Always think of that one.
Good choices. Paula S., she's like, I keep like using names and then using letters. I don't know. I forget what I'm doing right now. Paula, She's Like the Wind, You Don't Know.
Oh, Jesus.
From Dirty Dancing. You don't know this movie, then shame on you.
She's like the wind.
Oh, don't sing it, Patrick. Don't
hey,
sing
bro,
it.
If you're going to sing, I can sing.
My second would be Danger Zone. Danger Zone is really freaking popular, man. Michael H., it's not a movie, but it's Raining Men by The Weather Girls. Make me think of it, the in-loving... Sorry, I'm laughing as I read it. It's not a movie, but It's Raining Men by The Weather Girls. Makes me think of the In Living Color skit, Men on Film. God, that's funny when I think about it.
Oh, you know, and that actually reminds me of the Replacements, the Keanu Reeves football movie.
Yeah.
When they're in jail, I Will Survive, he starts out, Orlando Jones starts out talking to the guys, and it sounds like he's giving them kind of a pep talk. And
yep.
Yeah.
But he's saying the lyrics to I Will Survive, and then they all break out in like the line dance.
That's a good
whatever.
One.
Hey, yeah, I Will Survive.
Yeah.
Ashley says, Take My Breath Away from Top Gun and Unchained Melody and Ghost. How do we not think of that one? Shit.
Have you guys watched the supplemental material on the Top Gun Blu-ray where they talk about the music for the movie, and they go into some depth on Take My Breath Away? It's pretty interesting. Little bit of supplemental material.
No, but I know exactly what I'm doing as soon as the show's over. That's not it, but you know.
Don't patronize me, fucker.
I actually would watch that, Justin, if I had the Blu-ray.
I would. I just don't.
And they talk quite a bit about Danger Zone as well.
Kenny Loggins.
Kenny Loggins. What's he doing now? Nothing. That's what he'll be on a
reality
show.
He doesn't have to do anything. He made like gajillions of dollars in the '80s on soundtracks.
That is so much money. I don't even know what that number is, but.
It's a lot of zeros.
It is. Peter G. wrote in and asked us, Hey guys, what are your thoughts on ensembles in films? They seem to be better than single star movies. So the question is, do you guys prefer an ensemble movie where the weight is kind of distributed, or do you prefer the main guy or gal running the show?
Depends on the movie. Depends on the cast. All things being equal, I prefer ensembles.
Because?
Because I like the different characters and their interactions. I like the depth that you get with having a lot of characters interacting as opposed to just one person's journey. I don't find that nearly as interesting as, you know, a group of people.
I agree. You know, in a vacuum, I prefer an ensemble. You're more likely to have an actor who's kind of played a stereotype of role his or her whole career doing something different. You know, if they're a sweet, likable person, they might be an asshole in the ensemble, or they might be a villain in most of their movies. But you know what? They're a hero or something in this one. So it gives more opportunities for the variety to seeing some people that you recognize and are used to seeing them in a certain light. You get more of a chance to see them in a different light.
I like the ensemble cast as well, especially when you have ones that have multiple storylines, like Magnolia or Traffic, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you think about it, the more actors you get, you're kind of getting more bang for your buck. And it's also fun kind of recognizing and seeing actors that you may not have known were in the movie if you didn't read the whole bill. Or, like for example, I recently watched that movie 43, mm-hmm. which is really messed up movie, but I didn't know all the actors that were in that. And the fun for me in that movie was going through and saying, oh, that guy is in the, and I know that actor and I know that mm-hmm. actor. And plus it's ensembles are fun when you see actors that you don't think normally would go well together. And then they somehow pull it off. That's what I like it. But there's something to be said about a movie that is focused on a particular actor. Like Justin said, it depends on the actor. Like I could sit and watch Robert Downey Jr. and carry a movie by himself, I think. Mm-hmm.
Just in a coat in a closet, really. Well, I mean, or you could just be sitting on a chair.
Or we talked about a couple of weeks ago, a Sam Rockwell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there's a movie, that movie Moon, which have you seen that one yet?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
That one is basically he is the only actor in that movie, basically. Mm-hmm. And it was entertaining from start to end. So it really depends on the actor. It depends on like Justin said, the movie. There's a lot of variables that go on there. But at the end of the day, seeing a lot of people you know and recognize on screen is a lot more fun.
I like single star movies. I've said it many times. I think the movie star is coming to an end, I mean, so to speak. But I do like, if there's an actor you really like, you want to see them front and center. Mm-hmm. The one thing I love about ensemble movies is you can see an actor that typically does a certain kind of role, and they will take a chance in an ensemble picture where they won't take one. I said picture like I'm 80. but they won't take one in that big budget where everything's resting on their shoulders. Mm-hmm. So if you see this lower budget or kind of an ensemble movie where there's other people you know, holding some of the weight, they will take just crazy chances and do stuff that you wouldn't normally see them in. That's what I love to see. Because then you really see actors branch out and do different stuff. And to me, that's far more interesting than playing the same guy in every movie over and over and over. Right. Unless you're Jason Statham. I think it's okay if you're Jason Statham.
Some just required.
Mm-hmm. Some movies just work, though. And a lot of it is attributed to the writing. Like, look at like Ocean's 11. How many actors are in that? And
I'm convinced that whole movie's ad-lib. I'm convinced they didn't have a script at all. They just showed up and said, let's fucking hang out and rob a casino. And that's what they did.
Somehow we've got to get from this point to that point. All right, I'm just going to roll the camera. You guys do what you want.
Yeah, but I see what you're saying, Scott. Mm-hmm. I do. Also, I don't know if I said it. Betty R. sent in OMD from Pretty in Pink. I don't think I mentioned it, and I don't want to leave that one out.
Thank you.
If you leave, don't look back. Please don't take my heart away.
You actually have a good baritone, Brian.
Don't encourage him.
He did.
Oh, it's all.
He had a nice run there. All right, let's go to first Facebook. If you go to our facebook.com/TheHollywoodOutsider and like our page, which we wish you would do, we will mention you on the air the following week. This past week, Carlos Hernandez. You get mentioned twice in one show. So let me do it correct. Carlos Hernandez. All right. Now let's go to emails. Justin?
Our first one is from Michelle. She says, hey, guys, thanks again for the wonderful show. Each week you all make me smile and laugh so much that my coworkers are starting to question what it is I'm listening to that makes me so giddy. I'm writing to give the answer to the what's this movie question, which is 16 Candles, a movie I know is supposed to have nostalgic memories for me but doesn't. I never saw the appeal of this film. The other Hughes films were great, but this one was a miss. I think I could just not relate to a girl from a nice home in a safe neighborhood who's having a pity party for herself because her family missed her birthday because they were busy with another family event. Oh, boo-hoo for her. Am I missing the point of this nice, lighthearted film? Yes, owing that I could not give a shit about the main character in this film. In addition, I was wondering what your thoughts on the movie trailer for Cockneys versus Zombies were. This is normally the kind of movie I would ignore, but something in this trailer really made me laugh. I might check this one out solely for the Walker bit alone. If you have the time to watch it and report back, that would be so cool. Again, thank you all for taking the time each week to inform and entertain us hoes. While a 3-hour podcast might have almost killed you all, for me, it was an extra gift. One that I will treasure and appreciate always. Thanks, Michelle. Thank you so much for sending that in, Michelle. And how dare you? Bad mouth. Bad mouth, 16 Candles.
Oh, I was waiting for it.
Love that movie. Love it so much. I can't believe you bad mouthed it. As for Cockneys versus Zombies, I mean, sure, it looks kind of funny, but... Didn't we kind of reach our funny Brit zombie quota at Shaun of the Dead? Did we need more of that? I don't know.
We did, but I tell you what, this is one of those, if I'm sitting around the house bored at like 10 o'clock at night and there's nothing on, this is something I would put on and probably laugh my ass off.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I love, I think his name is Alan Ford. He's the older guy. He was in the movie Snatch. He was the villain in that.
Mm-hmm. Watch your mouth.
I love that guy. He cracks me up, so. I definitely want to check it out. It'll probably be like a Netflix or maybe iTunes. Mm-hmm.
But thanks. And she also sent a follow-up, being a very personal email. I won't read that, but that was very thoughtful. Thank you very much for that. And Brian?
Yeah, I got one here from Dan. I just finished listening to the After Hours Fantasy episode, and I have to say I squeed out loud several times. God, I hope you didn't make a mess.
Squeeze a sound, not a... action.
Maybe at your house, not at Brian's.
Well, if it happens several times, you never know what's happening. A special night goes out to my boy Justin
for the mention
of Stormbringer. As the conversation of best fantasy weapon started, I was muttering to myself, Stormbringer, no question. Come on, you bastards, it's Stormbringer. And then Justin comes through in the clutch. My man!
That's what I'm here for.
During the episode, Justin also mentioned Magic the Gathering, only in passing. I was wondering if any of you play MTG and your thoughts on its role in the fantasy world. It is grown from a card game that started in the 90s to books and video games in an ever-expanding fantasy world. Needless to say, I love the game. I started playing back in the 90s, stopped playing for years and recently picked it back up as my two boys are finally old enough to play the game as well. To Aaron's point, it is not nearly as involved as D&D, which I have never had the time to get into. My boys and I can easily play a game in about 15 minutes, but despite its simplicity in play, the new cards and creativity in how you make your deck leads always keeps the game fresh and interesting. If none of you play, I highly recommend it as a wonderful fantasy world. As always, love the podcast, both the normal and the after hours, and I can't leave without mentioning the 100th episode, my favorite part of which was listening to Aaron's ever-increasing exacerbation with drunk life as the episode went along. Aaron has the patience of Job, so I'll just leave it at that. But at the end, Aaron seemed on the verge of a mental breakdown. Laughed my ass off.
Thanks for that, Dick.
Imagine being in the room while that was going on.
Oh, man. Thanks, guys. You keep my 45-minute commute in the Utah desert bearable. Dan.
Son of a bitch.
Have any of you guys
played
Magic the Gathering?
He laughed at my mental breakdown. That's not funny. That hurts. What's that?
Have you played, any of you played Magic the Gathering?
I have not. No.
I have. Dabbled very little bit. I dabbled a very little bit.
Okay.
There's a version on Xbox that I tried, and a buddy of mine has been trying to get me into it. I can't wrap my head around it. I feel like I want to sit and actually play the card game with somebody to actually learn it better than with a tutorial on Xbox. But it intrigues me. But
I was working on my own Magic Gathering with the ladies.
Scott, read your email. Jesus.
This one comes from Madeline. She says, "Hi, guys. Great episode as always. Your discussions and humor just make my day better.
Yay.
Though I refrain from listening to your podcast while in public, people give me weird looks when I start laughing out of the blue. I had no interest whatsoever."
It happens a lot, it seems.
It does. A lot of people listen while they're at work.
They try to hide their shame.
"I had no interest whatsoever in seeing Pacific Rim, not my type of movie. But after hearing your reviews, I just have to go see it in the cinema.
Woop, woop.
Thank you.
Also, I have been waiting for years for the Seventh Son movie to come out, but seeing the trailer, I was really disappointed. The books were great, a bit spooky, and very captivating. On the other hand, from what the trailer shows, the movie looks very generic and cliche.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't impressed with the way the characters were portrayed either. I still have some hope that it will be a good movie and that they won't just ruin the story from the books."
How do you feel about Rooster Cogburn playing your lead character?
I think she's under the understanding that this is the Orson Scott Card series, because from what I understand, the Seventh Son film is based on a book, and I think it's just one, or it's a very small early series. So she may be disappointed with it because it's not of the same book.
And that would be Brian's fault. Just remember that, Madeline. Brian's fault.
Oh, wait. She says one more thing.
Get over it.
Madeline has one more thing to say. She says, "Proud to say that I'm a hoe. Keep up the good work."
Thanks, Madeline. We really appreciate it. And if
I apologize, Madeline, for like misleading you in any way. So
well, she tried to mislead all of us with the Kristen Wiig bullshit. It is wig, folks.
Okay, let's move on. Holy shit, gentlemen. I don't think I really need to tell you how much the fantasy-themed After Dark episode, which we really should just change the title to After Dark since another podcast actually uses After Hours, completed my universe. Do I?
It was After Dark sounds dirty.
Hose After Dark sounds...
Sounds like porn.
Hey, send in emails. We'll take a vote. Hose After Hours or Hose After Dark? Please, We'll take a tally, and whoever wins, wins.
Hose After Dark.
After Shave?
Hose After Dark or Hose After Hours? One of the two. You tell me which one
hose
wins.
Hose After Burn?
No.
Burn?
No, that one's not an option.
That comes the day later.
I feel the need for speed.
Completed my universe, do I? It was everything my little Lord of the Rings / Harry Potter nerd heart wanted. I adore you guys. Ashley S. And also she said she saw The Untouchables, watched it last night, and it made her very happy. Yay, French films. D.H. Haney, thanks for another great show, episode 101. I felt more intensity and feeling for Pacific Rim than you guys did. I freaked the F out the entire movie. I loved it all. I've been worried since the trailer started to look semi-cheesy, but yeah. So we all liked it. I mean, she obviously loved it, but we all liked it. Hugh O. said, wait, and it's Intouchables, not Untouchables. Brian. Hugh.
You're the one who said it wrong.
Shut up. I did not. Hugh O. said, way to cave under
he
pressure.
You wrote it right, and you said it wrong.
Hugh O. said, way to cave under pressure, because I changed the fucking name to Sharknado. Hosific Rim is much better.
Disagree.
Disagree. Sorry.
The people
we love our listeners, but you're wrong.
Sharknado.
Give you a little taste of what we go through every week. You're wrong.
Justin.
Yeah, from Michael B., just finished episode 101, Sharknado for H_Outsider. Great show. If you're not listening to this movie review podcast, you should.
Awesome. Thanks, Duh. Michael.
And the at the great Katie says, at H_Outsider, you guys are getting legit. Can't wait to say someday I listened to those guys before they were huge and famous. Ha! Wink.
That was a great line until she said, ha!
And then, yeah, it kind of hurts the sincerity of it a little bit, doesn't it?
Just a little bit.
We can't wait either.
Yeah, we can't wait until we're rich and famous. We're going to retire.
Well, some of us are already huge.
Aw. Is that a weight joke at yourself?
It is.
Oh. Do you eat because you're unhappy? Are you unhappy because you eat?
Both, which is terrible.
Was that a fat bastard?
I eat because reference? It's in the fridge.
That's right.
Stay through the credits for outtakes. TheHollywoodOutsider.com is the website. It's been revamped. Tell us if it sucks. Or Twitter, H_Outsider. Leave us a message or text us at 818-814-6426. Email us feedback@TheHollywoodOutsider.com. You can listen and subscribe for free. We don't charge. On iTunes. Listen on your Stitcher radio app. Give us a thumbs up or rating on iTunes, please. Or anything with an RSS feed. Some people have been asking me to recommend podcasts. Beyond Pod is one I like for a podcatcher. So if you're looking for an app, that's one I like.
Yeah, if you use the Apple iPod, my favorite, and I've tried several, is one called iCatcher. Love this iPad, this podcasting app.
And real quick, our contest winners from our episode 100 contest, where everybody sent in emails, which we really appreciated. The winners are BB Raven, D.A. Chaney, and Peter G. So you will all be in touch with me about your t-shirts, and we'll try to have another contest here soon. Thanks to each of the podcasters. Brian Williams.
Love you, bitches.
Love you, too. Justin McCumber.
Aaron, you take my breath away. Take my breath away.
And his Minor Magic and Haywire is available now. And it's also, there's a little link if you go to our host stuff on our page or on our website, and you can actually just click right to it. Easy going.
Go buy a copy. People like it.
And Scott Clark.
Thanks for having me, Aaron, as always.
Thanks for coming, Scott. And remember, guys, the next time you go to, what are you talking about?
He said, thank you for coming.
The next thing.
Knowing you two are there together just makes it so much worse.
Oh, sticky microphones.
The next time you go to a theater.
What does he put, like a pop filter on it? Bye.
Fucking popcorn.
Don't you forget about me.
Don't you come see about me.
All right.
I'll be alone. Dancing
naked in my basement. Like, I'm not saying it's great. I'm just saying that.
I tried to watch it one night. I tried to borrow it from my daughter, and she didn't have it. So I'm like, well, I guess I'm not watching that tonight. And that's the last I had.
She's probably rubbing one out to it.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I can't see pictures. I mean,
I can't blame her. I'm
feeling bad. What? Why would he still bang his daughter in front of him?
What the Jesus. Fuck
is happening?
I make him watch.
It make me watch.
Purchased my ticket. One of the girls working at the counter was like, the Goonies. What is that? Is that a cartoon or something?
Oh, I was like, fucking punch her in the throat.
How old is she?
20.
Oh, that's why.
It's like it came up when you were fucking born.
It's never too late to do a retroactive abortion. That's what I'm saying. This week or the week before?
While we're correcting stuff.
Yeah, that was a couple weeks ago.
It's actually Henry Cavill, not Cavill.
Is it?
It is.
Well, why don't you wait till we get to the actual show? And
Free. We're all in. Hey, here's where everybody's fucked up. So I'm jumping on this bandwagon.
Gonna start it.
I'm taking the horses and I'm.
If you leave, don't look back.
There you go.
The other way.
All right, Marshmallows, you asked for it. Yay. Nay, you demanded it. And now, yes,
no,
you
I paid
got...
for it.
Yeah, we paid for it. Sorry. Go ahead, Brian. Start again.
God damn it. You fuckers know how to derail some shit.
Go ahead. Start again.
Aaron should be reveling at fucking you up.
I know it. I know it. That's why I can't get too upset about it. I've got so much, he's got so much equity built up that fuck.